Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my co-pilot and navigator, Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. So then, David Vitti. Mate, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm pleased to see you're not smothered in a duvet like you were last time we met.
I'm not. I did have this ridiculous idea about creating my own sound studio by putting the duvet over me in the bedroom. But having done that for an hour, by the end of it, I was sweating. It was uncomfortable. And we must also point out, for those that are listening to this podcast, whenever they are listening, that this is recorded during the lockdown. So we are once again in a virtual world with cameras and laptops and microphones and whatnot.
It's quite good because actually trying to get a hold of my next guest in the flesh because he's busy, but actually this is, it works for everyone. So let's tee him up. Let's give him the introduction he perhaps deserves. So my next guest is a great friend of mine. It's fair to say he's a bit better than average in the kitchen. It's James Martin.
Is that it? You wrote that all by yourself? Yeah, that's the reason why you don't write my script for TV, you see. There's a reason why you drive a car, Jason. Anyway, how are you doing, guys? Are you all right?
Yeah, we're good, thank you. I actually don't know the story of how you two met. I know that you've been friends for many years, but where did your paths first cross?
Oh, I can tell you. And by the way, I'm still owed the gift.
Before you do, let me tee him up. This was one of the best days working on a car TV show I've ever had. It was at Silverstone. Yeah. And, I mean, your feel from James's reaction. I mean, it was epic. Over to you, James.
I've been a car fanatic for 30 years. When I was a young kid, I used to collect little toy cars. I was brought up on a farm, so we were pig farmers, didn't have any money out. So in the old exchange in Mart, you remember that? Saved up enough pocket money to buy myself a Mini. And I painted flames on the side of it. And that was the Mini that I rallied around the farm. I was aged 10 years old. That's 10 years old. I bought my first car, a little Mini. Anyway, you progress forward and you're kind of working in London and peering through the windows of all these fancy showrooms and thinking, one day, possibly never, I'll buy myself a car. Yeah. And then things progress. And then obviously TV suddenly hits and then you move on and you progress in work and you find yourself very lucky in situations. And this one particular situation, I got a phone call from a TV company saying, would I be interested in doing this thing for a car program and or been a part of a car program, an item on a car? And I said, yeah, fine. I said, well, we know you're interested in cars, but nobody really knows you're interested in cars. And I said, well, I don't promote it that much and didn't then. And I'm just like collecting sort of stuff. And then I sent them a list of what I had in the collection. They said, look, what if we were to offer something that you wouldn't, If I could say, what would be the greatest experience you've ever done in your life in terms of a car, what would you want it to be? Yeah. And I said, drive an F1 car. I'd love to drive an F1 car. And at that moment in time, I was just buying an old Maserati off a guy that I knew who was dealing in F1 cars. Mm-hmm. My budget didn't stretch to an F1 car, and I didn't understand it. But then this sort of the two conversations aligned, and then we ended up at Silverstone. And that's where I met Jason. And then he turned around and he, you know, I can't remember who you were racing for then, Jace. I can't remember, but he was all there in his overalls looking about 12. I looked about sort of 24 stone in my overalls. I thought, oh my God. And I tried to breathe in and that didn't really work. And then he said, well, you know, you need to start in a little car. So I think we started in a Renault Clio.
Yeah, little Renault Clio.
Something like that. And I was trying to follow him.
Yeah, and it was like ducks and drakes, wasn't it? I'd go out and say, right, follow me. I'll show you the race line. And we were on a little, you know, the Stowe Circuit at Silverstone. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we just kept on building up. So after the Clio was
And then it was a Formula Ford, and then a Formula Ford, and then I think Formula Junior, all the way. And then the whole idea of it was that the guy who owned the F1 car was there. He was there.
Right.
And he said, I'm selling this car, but I'm only going to let you drive it if I think you're good enough. Because it was a Bennett, 1996 Benetton, Gerhard Berger car. And anyway, Jason drove it and it looked amazing. He came in from the circuit with a big beaming smile on his face. Anyway, we stood on the pit wall and he said, look, I think, you know, you've got the chance to drive it. And so I couldn't believe it. I kind of pinching yourself because it is an event when you get in an F1 car. It's something that you'll never experience. And anyway, just while we're still in the wall, he said, well, I've set a lap time. If you get within, I think it was 5 seconds or maybe 3 seconds of you, then I'll buy you dinner anywhere you want, in any restaurant you want. You can see where this is going, and you can see why he's still not paid. Anyway, chefs have a bit of a competitive streak, probably more than racing drivers, to be honest with you. And little did he know that we were quite competitive. And I technically don't care whether I ram it in a barrier or I end up in via Hampshire, via Dorset, travelling at 200 miles an hour. I've got literally no fear kind of thing. It's mad in a way. But anyway, I set out going in this car, and I was flat on the first lap going past him. Mm. My eyes were on stalks. It's like going through a... All I can say is it's like Star Trek. You know that
yeah.
Warp speed.
Warp speed. That's what it's like, because everything just goes, ooh. Yeah. And anyway, I pulled into the pits and took the helmet off and, yeah.
Mate, honest to God, I have never seen a set of eyes out. Actually, out of the face, on wires.
Like Roadrunner.
I mean, it was unbelievable. And do you know what? He did a mega job. But the best thing of all is you gave it some pasty. And it was just mega to see. I mean, he said, you know, first lap, first time past the pits, we literally went. I kid you not.
Yeah, my foot was flat to the floor. Yeah. Shortly followed by foot flat to the floor on the brakes. But it's an experience like, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable thing.
Yeah, because you've got that really sharp left hander, haven't you, at the end of that straight?
Yeah, and that comes up in that thing very, very quickly. Yeah, you get a whole different mentality with F1 drivers. Now, I mean, that was a 96 car, but I've driven older stuff since then and newer stuff, but you get a whole different respect for drivers and like Jason. And since then, we've gone on to now race together at Goodwood and bits and pieces and sort of built up the car collection. And there's a few in the garage that he wants to sort of drive, although he's getting older, you know. Maybe he should go for a bit of a younger driver as a team.
Whoa, enough of that. Mate, you're only as good as your last race.
Oh, yes. Thank God for lockdown.
You're one of the few people that wants lockdown to continue, aren't you?
Oh, no. Do you know, it's bonkers. I've not driven a race car since October last year.
I'd love to drive a touring car, because it's that kind of... I'm obsessed with cars. I like the collecting of it. I like the hobby side of it. I don't understand how they all work. I wouldn't even begin to think how it all works, but I just totally respect the drivers and the people and the teams and the mechanics and the engineers and designers that can do that sort of stuff. It's it's something that beyond me. I'll just stick to cooking.
Mate, I was going to say, Dave, this is a great story. Tell us a little bit about, you know, you've spent some really, really special time with JYS, with Jackie Stewart, didn't you?
Yeah.
Really beautiful private moments. Just give us a bit of a flavour of that.
Well, again, the phone rang again, and it's all through collecting cars, really. And people seeing me out at sort of Goodwood and sort of droning around trying to compete with these guys. And places such as Carfest, and word gets around that you've got a few bits and pieces. And anyway, this phone rang again, and they're picking icons, really. Colin McRae was one of them.
Yeah.
So Jackie Stewart was another one. And Moss was the other one. And so they phoned me up, and he said, look, we haven't got anybody that's ever driven an F1 car before. You're the only one that we know that's known that can drive. I said, well, can and will and is a different thing. So he said, well, we're thinking about doing this TV show on Sir Jackie Stewart, and you follow him around for 10 days at his house, just literally shadow him around all over the place. And wherever he goes, we go. And we end up at Monza bringing his Tyrrell over, and you get to drive it around Monza.
Wow.
So I went, I'm up for that. I'll be up for that one. And so that's where it ended up. We went to Lake Como and Villa d'Este in a suite there. And I had a great, great conversation over breakfast with him about racing and all about it. You know, went up to Scotland to his house down here. Obviously, his place in Switzerland. I mean, loads of different moments where you talked about his wonderful wife and how they met, and the whole conversation is great. And then it accumulated in one of the most amazing moments of my life. It sounds weird, but chefing and all that sort of stuff was to drive at Monza. And we started off at Monza about sort of 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you know, Monza, it's in a park and you fire up the car. We were the only people on the entire circuit, nobody else out, fired up the car. And of course, by lap five, everybody started to come out of the park and come out of the town, and they could hear this car. And, and anyway, so Jackie was there, and he was talking to me in the radio. He said, "Right, now go into this." And he didn't look at it on monitor. He knew where I was on the circuit by
the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, "You need to brake later there and accelerate quicker there." Anyway, cut a long story short, I was coming back into the pits every five laps. The sun started to set, and I'm going underneath the bridge on the straight, the back straight. As I'm coming underneath the bridge, the sun was setting. I've got people lining the woodland.
Amazing.
And I'm flat out, hit the brakes, come in, and then you've got that long sweeping right-hander towards the straight. And as I came past the straight with the sun setting behind me, I could see it in the wing mirrors. So Jackie Stewart was literally up on the gantry on the wire fence, hauled himself up onto the wire fence, and he was waving his fist like that, going, "Go for it, go for it, go for it." And I went, I don't care. I'm just going to... Do I need to brake at this last bit, this chicane? I'll just keep going. It was amazing. Amazing.
What a moment, eh? What a moment.
In a way, James, you must feel like with these incredible experiences, you're sort of living out the dreams that you had as a little boy, aren't you?
Yeah,
to an extent,
yeah.
You know, you're sort of, you're driving the cars that you probably had as toys or had as posters on the wall and whatnot.
Yeah, life's all about, you know, great things and disappointing things. And then you come back and Jason is your teammate. So it's like... The great thing about this life is you get one shot of life, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't have any regrets. Don't have any regrets about anything. And just try and succeed in whatever way you possibly can, and been offered stuff like that is a life changing. It's a once in a lifetime thing, you know. And and to be able to do that, and to be able to start collecting these cars and collecting stuff. And now I've got, you know, I'm talking about a program with Colin McRae. I used to watch Colin McRae when I was a young kid when rallying. I've got his Sega Rally 2 over there, the arcade game, and now I've got his Ford Focus just in this other room behind me. Yeah, to sit in his car, and it's the car that he won four rounds of the World Championship in it, and it's exactly the same as when he drove it. It's
amazing.
Proper.
Well, do you know the lush thing, James, is seeing how excited you still are now telling those stories. Yeah. That's the best thing. In that, these are proper moments in life, aren't they?
Well, they are. It's like, it's you know, in the chef world, we work so long hours, as you know, Jay. But the release that you get from that is to be able to do stuff that you couldn't even wish and ever dream to do. I remember the third year I competed at Goodwood at the Revival. I remember going out and we were testing, but they were qualifying. I was out in a mini, quick mini. Anyway, they put me in the bloody racing driver category instead of the owner category. Yeah. I got stuffed in with these bloody lot.
Wonder who organised that then.
Yeah, anyway, so I'm going around. I've got, I can't remember, I had F1 drivers around me. And anyway, I qualified. I came into the pits and the guy there was saying, "Congratulations." I went, "What do you mean congratulations?" He said, "You qualified fourth."
Wow.
Out of 36. It only started to rain. And as it started to rain, I just put a quick lap in where it started to get damp before it properly peed down. And I got fourth. And I remember starting on the start line. I turned to my right and I've got Jochen Mass, and I'm surrounded by world champion racing drivers, rally drivers, touring car drivers behind me.
Yeah.
And I've got Jochen Mass to my right, and I'm in this mini going, "I really shouldn't be here on a Sunday." Anyway, the lights went, the flag went down, and by the first corner, I was last. I got properly stuffed off, but... you know, to experience that is once in a lifetime.
So, James, take us back to the beginning then. You've been a huge car fan for more than 30 years, as you said. You were growing up on the farm. You're obviously driving on the farm earlier than most of us were behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Was passing your driving test one of those things that you just couldn't wait for?
Yeah, I was 17 and 2 days when I passed my driving test. I had half an hour lesson. You know, you went in for one of those cancellation tests. Yeah. So yeah. I put that in before my 17th birthday. And I passed 17 in 2 days because I was driving tractors on the road at 15. I had a car when I was a young kid. I had a Fiat 126. I had a little Mini. Yeah, all manner of different sort of cars. And then when I passed my test, I bought, the only car I could afford was a Vauxhall Nova with a boot on the back.
Oh, yeah.
It was a 950cc.
Pretty car.
Yeah, it was actually three cars welded together, they told me afterwards. But I went everywhere in it. I went everywhere. And funny enough, there's this road in the North Yorkshire Moors that I think Top Gear uses quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know where it is unless you know where it is.
Yeah.
And there's this beautiful bit of road, which I remember going to when I first passed my test. I think it was probably the first day I passed my test. I drove that road in that little Nova. And I said to myself, this is a weird thing. I said to myself, one day I'm going to come back and drive a Ferrari down here. And when I bought this classic Ferrari, which I was quite fortunate to buy about 15 years ago, instead of getting it delivered here, I had it delivered
to the road,
to that top of that road, and I drove it backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, put it back in the trailer, and then got brought back down to my house. But life's always been about that with cars. It's been about a journey, like many people. And when I was a young kid, 8 years old, I used to go around the kitchen table at the farm on a skateboard. And my granddad and my grandma said, "What do you want to do when you get older?" And I said, "I want to be a chef." And my granddad said, "You want to get a proper job? You want to be a cricketer?" he was a cricketer. I was like, "All right, cheers." And my grandma said, "Well, no, he wants to be a chef." He said, "So what's the aspiration?" I said, "I want a restaurant when I'm 30, Ferrari when I'm 35. And I was quite fortunate. I had a restaurant at 21. I got my first Ferrari at 24, something like that. Then sold it at 25 because I had to pay the tax bill. Didn't realize you had to pay tax. Like that, you heard it. But yeah, I had a Ferrari 360 outside my flat that I was renting on £60 a month rent. I had a Ferrari 360 around the back, didn't have a garage, and I was living above a Chinese takeaway in an Indian restaurant. Then I sold that and got a sensible car, which was a Lotus Caterham, which was my daily runabout.
Wet arms and wet elbows.
Yeah, well, I was the head chef at the Hotel of Ad in Winchester then, and I got spotted to do a programme called The Big Breakfast.
Yeah.
I left at 5 o'clock in the morning with the car loaded full of stuff in the back, all in little Tupperware boxes, and off I went, and I prepped my own stuff and went there and cooked the dish and drove back. And then that's how it all started in television, really. Somebody spotted me and Keith Floyd came for a meal in my restaurant and it went mental after that. It went crazy.
You've got Keith Floyd's de cheveux, haven't you? Have you still got that?
Yeah.
Does it still smell of red wine?
Yeah, I got offered, when he passed away, his family were looking after his estate. And I don't think he left this country with much, but to be honest with you, but he had a stove. They offered me the stove first, and I thought, how much? And then I didn't bother phoning back. And I'm pretty sure Jamie Oliver bought the cooker. He hasn't said anything, but I'm bloody sure he's got that cooker.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. And then I got a phone call saying, look, he's got a de cheveux thing that he had for 17 years, 16 years in France. And I said, look, if it is what it is, then you get 3 independent quotes and tell me how much it's worth, and I'll double it. So, wow. So if it is what it's worth, so I think I paid £8,000 for it, and it arrived. It's got all the dents in it. It smells like odd bins inside. the key has got a cork on it, but it's exactly how I had it. All I did was sort out the electric. I gave it to the guy who stores a lot of my cars, and I said, look, I'm going to give you this, but the deal is you can't make this look any different to what it is, yeah. But it's got to run. He said, I can't work on this car. It's depressing because I need to clean it. He said, I said, no, you and anyway, he texts me. And he's walking around Halfords and he's got a door panel and he's walking around Halfords looking at paint. And he said, I can't find this. I'm going to go to Homebase. So he goes to Homebase and gets one of those mixing pots on the thing. And he matches it to the mixing pot on the bloody door. And he's taken the door into Homebase and he's basically hand painted it. He said, if you don't want it, because he can't do it perfectly that. It was just painted with a slap of paint, wasn't it? So he matched the bits of rust that he took off and redone. He took the whole door into Homebase to get a colour match for it.
So, James, take us back to the beginning again then. So before you were fortunate enough to purchase and collect some of the cars that you'd always dreamed of as a young lad, what followed the Nova? What was the early car history?
The Nova was a while. I had the Nova right the way through college and all the way through to London. And then I wanted a Peugeot 205 GTI. I could afford the car, but the bloody insurance. I couldn't afford the insurance. I wanted a 1.9 now, and you could get a 1.6, but I couldn't do the insurance. Yeah. And then I wanted a XR2, the first Mark 1 XR2.
With the pepper pot wheels?
Yeah, I couldn't afford that either, running insurance. Anyway, I went back to London, and I ended up leaving London with about £10,000 in debt, so I didn't have enough money to buy a car, really. And then after the Vauxhall Nova, I bought an Audi S4. It was a second-hand thing, and then that blew up, and then I didn't have enough money, so I bought a 1.9 diesel Fiesta.
All right.
In bottle green.
Tasty.
1.9. And then I bought a 1.6 Fiesta in blue.
Mm-hmm.
And then I part exchanged it for a Westfield, which was a...
Are they like a kit car?
Yeah, kit car with a Pinto engine thing. Yeah. It's a bit agricultural thing, but that was the first moment when I started to get a bit wacky. My car collection's a bit wacky, as Jason will know, but I quite like different sort of stuff. And that started the wackiness.
But the S4 was a bit of a departure from the stuff before and afterwards, though, wasn't it? And actually, looking at it, that was perhaps the first signs of madness, almost.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, actually. You get a really, really old, knackered out, 265,000-mile S4. Yeah, that'd be a really good idea. proved that he wasn't. And shortly afterwards, then I had a 1.9 diesel Fiesta. And then it went a bit wacky. Then I had the Westfield. Then I had a Caterham. And then at Heart Exchange, my Caterham, which bought me the extras on a Lotus Elise. I had the second Lotus Elise ever built.
Did you really?
Yeah, second one ever built. Then I part exchanged it and I bought a brand new, that's when I started to make a little bit of money, I bought a brand new S4, Audi S4.
Okay.
So I went back, but I bought a brand new one.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it. It was a silver car with sort of a light grey seat. Really quite, it looked beautiful in the showroom.
Mm.
So then I bought this S4 and then I drove it all the way home and then got out and the car seats had turned blue because it was wet. the car seat, my jeans had coloured the bloody stained the seats on the 200-mile journey home. So that was kind of like then. And then that's when it all went wacky. That's when I part exchanged that and got the 360. And then I bought, then shortly after that, I bought a 355.
Which was the prettier car out of the two?
Lovely car. Yeah, I wish I'd have bought it, kept it still. I had a manual 355, which was beautiful, red with cream, nice car. And I had that for a while. And then I got a job for Vauxhall Nova. They're bringing out the new Corsa. So Vauxhall, part of the deal was they gave me a car to drive around in. So I had a Vauxhall...
The SRI?
Yeah, something like that. I was driving around
in. Or VXR or whatever it was.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Jason knows that I got into cars through the Ferrari thing, but then quickly thought, I don't want a new one. Mm. I think it's me being a Northern and a Yorkshire person, to be honest.
How much?
Well, we're buying a really new one again. How much? Bloody thing. So then I thought, I'll go into classics. I was working like a Trojan. I'd gone from $8,000 in debt to deciding within a year whether to buy a Pagani Zonda or to buy a house.
You should have bought the Zonda.
Pagani Zonda or a house. And the Pagani Zonda were $175,000 or a house. So then I thought, I'm having neither of this. I'm going to look for a classic. So I remember looking through the magazines. That's what I used to do when I was doing all these TV shows. Yeah, I flicked through car magazines, not through cookery books and stuff like that. I flicked through car magazines. And there was a show in Essen, in Germany, a motor show in Essen. So it was the biggest classic car show in Europe, and it is amazing still. So I got in the car, I drive to Essen in the Corsa, get all the way to Essen, park underneath, I get there early, and you queue up for your ticket. And as I walked in, there's like the NEC, massive great halls. There's queues and queues of Germans, there's people from all over the world. Anyway, as I walked through the hall, I looked to my right, Mercedes-Benz had a massive great stand there.
Yeah.
And on the stand, there were two 300 SL Gullwings.
Oh, wow.
And within half an hour, I'd bought one of them. And that was the same price as what the Pagani Zonda was back in the UK. And
actually, you bought the right car. You bought the right car.
But the thing is, James, and this perhaps, as I say, by your own admission, could be the Yorkshireman in you, is the fact that if you buy the right car, then it's not like wasting $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever, because actually, if you buy the right car and you look after it, these are investments. They're like works of art, aren't they?
Only you or I would say that. You try telling that to your mother. Age 24 years old, that I'm living above a Chinese takeaway in an Indian restaurant. I haven't got a house and I've just spent $175,000 on a 50-year-old Mercedes-Benz. Yeah, it didn't really go down too well like that, to be honest with you.
That's gone to bloody rack and ruin, you have, lad, being down south.
Yeah, you
got priorities all wrong.
So, James, what is still to be added to the collection then? And this is, I suppose, in a money no object way. What could you add in terms of dream cars or car?
I would probably sell the entire collection and buy 250 short wheelbase. I had the opportunity to buy one a while back. I told Chris Evans to buy it. He didn't buy it. It was 1.1 million.
What's that now? 8, 10?
Yeah, comp car, probably 12. A road car, probably between 7 and 8, probably. Yeah. Aluminium car more, and then obviously comp car more than that. But I was quite fortunate to drive one. That to me is the one of the ultimate, that I suppose. The 275 that I've got, and I've recently bought a few bits to the collection, but I've got a lovely 275 that I've had 15 years, comp car. I've got a lovely lovely Daytona, which I lovely, 1972 Daytona, and Testarossa, Dino, and the Minis and stuff like that. But the two recent ones, the rally ones, I've got really into rally cars, and so I've been offered... Literally today, I got offered a Petter Solberg Subaru, which is a nice bit of kit. But
yeah,
it's raced in the same year as my Focus that McRae had. But I think the most recent car that I bought, I mean, the car that I bought several cars in life, which I usually take around to my mates. I took it around to Jody Schechter, who's my good mate, and Jason was there, and I said, "What do you think to this?" You know, and that was the only car at the collection where both of them, they nearly spilt themselves over it. I remember having the same moment. I was at Scarborough when I was training as a young chef. There was the old Aston Martin V8 Vantage, the Prince of Wales spec. Beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. It was in red leather and it was green. And it was parked right outside Henry Marshall's. Obviously, the owner, it was his thing. And I remember stood there looking at this thing going, gee, look at that. It's just amazing. I eating my fish and chips going, wow, one day. And the owner came out and he went, "Can I help you?" And I said, "What's that car, mister?" You know, he said, "Well, normally I get kids that come along and, you know, they spit at it or, you know, that not interested in it." He said, "It's Aston Martin." And I went, "Wow, it's amazing." He said, "Would you like to sit in it?" And that was the moment. No. That was the moment.
Really?
That was it. I can't have been any more than 8 years old, really. I can't have been any more than that, 7, 8 years old. But that was the moment that the car bug started. So now, when I did Carfest last year, it was about 2 weeks before I got the GT40. I took it to Carfest and I lift the kids over the barrier and then I get them to sit in the car. Because I think that they're the next generation that are going to be collecting these cars. And they're just lovely things to look at. You know, I kind of go in the garage and pinch myself every time. You know, I've been pottering around, I've been cleaning them. I'm no good at the mechanic side of it, but just to look at it and just to clean it, you think this is something else, you know, and you look at all the little tiny little things that make it good or make it bad, but they all make it what it is, you know, and magical. I left London with 50 quid in my pocket and a dream. And yeah, can't believe it. Every day I can't believe it.
Sounds like you need someone to come and blow the cobwebs out of them.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe.
I think on that note, we should wrap up.
That's about it for this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. Thanks, as always, to Dave, and a big thanks to our special guest this week, the brilliant James Martin.
Cheers, fella.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5 or even a 10-star rating. Press the subscribe button or share the podcast on all your socials. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.